by today's sales circulars and the editorial and opinion pages. That's all ahead, right after the morning sports on Chris. It's 7:30.
Chris Sports. Chris takes a look now at the sports sections of today's newspapers. The sports data, sports stats you get only from the newspaper. Now, Chris Sports.
Hello, welcome to Chris Sports. I'm Chris Kelly, and today I'm reading from the Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024, Hartford Current Sports section. Taking a look at the photos on the front page of the sports section this morning, we have a picture of Jets quarterback Zach Wilson walking off the field with his hands in a muffler as he's in the Jets uniform, and he has been traded to the Broncos. So we have a story, the top geographical story, if you will, physically in the Current on that. The story that devotes the most pictures and space this morning is about Liam McNeely, who's a five-star player at Mount Verde Academy, and he's going to be checking out the University of Connecticut this weekend. He is pictured in his Mount Verde uniform dribbling in a game at the Hoopaw Classic in Springfield back in January, and in a second picture, playing defense on the McDonald's All-American team as his blue team is playing the red team. And the first story of the morning has a photograph of Aaron Boone arguing with home plate umpire as part of a story titled, "Boone Immediately Ejected Appears to Blame Fan for Enraging Home Plate Ump, Athletics 2, Yankees nothing." Aaron Boone received a quick hook on Monday as the Yankee manager was ejected just two batters into the team's opening series 2-0 loss to the Athletics at Yankee Stadium. It all started when A's leadoff man Estuary Ruiz got hit by a pitch on his back foot to start the game. As the slider grazed the center fielder's foot, Ruiz also checked his swing. Home plate umpire Hunter Weldenstadt then motioned toward the first base umpire, John Tompain, who signaled that Ruiz did not swing. Boone, confused over the call, appeared to want the hit-by-pitch checked as well, and he made his wishes known. After the next pitch, a strike to Tyler Nevin, a fiery Weldenstadt informed Boone that he did check on the hit-by-pitch. "You're yelling at me," Weldenstadt overheard on the Yes Network broadcast, barbed at Boone. "I did what I was supposed to do and checked. I'm looking for him to get hit by the pitch. And you got anything else to say? You're gone." From there, multiple camera angles showed Boone staying quiet as he perched himself on the top step of the dugout. However, a fan in a blue pullover sitting directly behind Boone appeared to say something that Weldenstadt took exception to. The umpire immediately ejected the manager, who became enraged as he tried to explain that he hadn't said anything. Boone and bench coach Brad Asmus even pointed toward the stands while the fans pointed at the man in blue. "Aaron, you're done," Weldenstadt screamed. "I don't care who said it. You're gone." "What do you mean you don't care? I didn't say a word. It was over the dugout," Boone replied before letting out some profanity. "I didn't say anything. I didn't say anything, Hunter." More curse words followed from Boone, but Weldenstadt had already made up his mind. Meanwhile, the Daily News and other news outlets tried to speak with the fan in question. However, reporters were repeatedly denied access to the Legends Suite, the section that includes seats behind the dugout. Boone had been ejected twice this season. He leads skippers with 34 ejections since becoming the Yankee manager in 2018. With Boone watching from his office, Carlos Rodon surrendered just one hit while completing seven innings for the first time as a Yankee. All of the lefty's frames were scoreless. Rodon also walked two, struck out four over 92 pitches. Rodon now has a 2.7 earned run average this season. While going deep into games had been an issue prior to Monday, he's looked far better than the injured riddled pitcher who recorded a 6.85 ERA last season. While Rodon shoved, the Yankees offense sputtered against J.P. Sears, a pitcher the team traded to Oakland in the ill-fated 2022 Frankie Montez deal. Sears, another southpaw, blanked the Bombers for six innings while limiting them to one hit. He also struck out seven while issuing one walk over 91 pitches. No runs were scored until the ninth. That's when Oakland's Zach Gelof blasted a two-run shot off Victor Gonzalez, who had earned a save on Sunday. Instead of answering back, the Yankees remained lifeless in the bottom of the inning against the flame-throwing Mason Miller. With poor defensive showing, the team fell to 15-8 on the season. Wilson's New York roller coaster ride ends. Zach Wilson's time with the Jets has officially come to an end. According to sources, Wilson and a 2024 seventh-round pick will head to the Broncos in exchange for a 2024 sixth-round pick. The Jets and the Broncos will divide his remaining roster bonus of $5.5 million. After owner Woody Johnson voiced his displeasure on the NFL Honors red carpet in February about not having a backup quarterback following Aaron Rodgers' Achilles tear four plays into the Jets' debut last September, the team gave Wilson permission to seek a trade. However, it took 2 months to part with the number two overall pick in the 2021 NFL draft out of BYU. Wilson played 12 games for the Jets last season and threw for 2,271 yards, 8 touchdowns, and 7 interceptions. During his 3 years with the Jets, Wilson passed for 6,293 yards, 23 touchdowns, 25 interceptions, and had a quarterback rating of 73.2. The Jets were 12-21 in the 33 games Wilson started. After those three less-than-stellar seasons with the Jets, Wilson didn't have much trade value. His time with the Jets was nothing short of humiliation. Wilson was benched multiple times in 2022 for his poor play, which led to the Jets acquiring Rodgers last spring. The Jets had hoped Wilson would take a step back and watch Rodgers for a year or two, but they were not afforded that luxury following the four-time MVP's injury. The signing of Tyrod Taylor to a two-year contract in March, teams knew that the Jets and Wilson needed to move on. Now, days before the 2024 NFL draft, Wilson will return closer to his childhood home in Utah to play for the Broncos. Wilson will join a Broncos team that needs quarterback help. The only other quarterbacks on Denver's roster are Jared Stidman and Ben DiNucci. The Broncos are also expected to select a quarterback at some point during this week's draft. Now that his time with the Jets has ended, Wilson has to be considered one of the biggest draft busts in franchise history. When he was drafted in 2021, he was expected to solidify the quarterback position under general manager Joe Douglas and coach Robert Saleh. Instead, Wilson will be remembered for his inept play and immaturity issues. Five-star treatment. Huskies hosting recruit McNeely on official visit. The UConn men's basketball team is in the mix for ESPN's highest-ranked high school recruit still available and perhaps the best three-point shooter in the entire 2024 class, Liam McNeely. A teammate of former UConn target Cooper Flagg at the powerhouse Montverde Academy in Florida, McNeely originally committed to Indiana over Kansas and Texas, but reopened his recruitment early last month after the Hoosiers announced head coach Mike Woodson would return for the 24-25 season. He is the 11th-ranked player in his class, according to ESPN, and number 16 by 247 Sports. For the reigning back-to-back national champions, McNeely could help fill a shooting void left by the departures of Cam Spencer and potentially Alex Caravan, who will test the NBA draft waters before making his decision. McNeely, a native of Richardson, Texas, uses the same phone call celebration as departing All-American Tristan Newton, who was second on the team in three-point attempts and shot 32% from deep in his final year of eligibility. The 6'7" McNeely averaged 12.5 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists on the season with Mount Verde, which finished the year undefeated at 34-0 and beat UConn commit Isaiah Abraham's team, Paul VI, to win the high school national championship. He finished the year 68 for 155 on three-point attempts, or 44%. He played against UConn's other class of 24 commit, point guard Ahmed Noel, in the Jordan Brand Classic at Barclays Center in Brooklyn Sunday night before extending his trip to stores and beginning his official visit with the Huskies Monday. McNeely scored 25 points and was named MVP of the team, which lost the competitive All-Star game 118-113. McNeely would be the 13th McDonald's High School All-American to choose UConn and the second under head coach Dan Hurley. Stephon Castle, the first since 2016, was named Big East Freshman of the Year and picked for the NCAA All-Tournament team this year before announcing his decision to enter the NBA draft. Expected to lose at least 4 starters from the national championship roster, with center Donovan Klingon also entering the draft, UConn landed the commitment of former Michigan big Terrace Reed shortly after he visited during the national championship parade through Hartford. UConn is 68-11 over the last 2 seasons and became only the 3rd back-to-back national champion in the last 50 years when it completed the most dominant run in NCAA tournament history and cut down the nets in Arizona earlier this month. McNeely hasn't yet announced any additional visits. Romagulu enters the transfer portal. Apostolos Romagulu, the little-used fan favorite from Greece, is entering the transfer portal after 2 championship seasons with UConn men's basketball. Romagulu, a sophomore and big personality, typically from the end of the bench, played in 44 games for the Huskies over the last 2 seasons, averaging 1.8 minutes per appearance over his career. He scored 19 points, 23 of which came this year, as he finished 7 of 12 from the field and 5 of 9 from beyond the 3-point in late in games. The native of Greece scored 7 points in 5 game appearances during this year's NCAA tournament run, getting on the board in blowout wins against Stetson and San Diego State. He was a late addition to UConn's roster when he came over from the Greek Basketball Champions League in September 2022, where he played with PAOK, in addition to competing with the Greek 18 and under team in the FIBA European Challenges last year. The news was first reported by Store Central on Friday. Are things different for the Celtics this year? How they respond to the Heat in Game 2 will be quite telling. As you might have noticed, because how could you not, every NBA playoff team has a slogan that is emphasized and branded on every giveaway imaginable. For the Celtics, the phrase that pays is, "It's different here." Not bad as far as those contrived slogans go, though, hey, how about we collect that 18th banner and finally have another parade in the city, is more on point. But what matters, as the juggernaut 64-win top-seeded Celtics accelerate into their first-round playoff series with the dastardly Heat, is whether it's different here. What matters is that it's different from last year. I do believe it is. This is written by Chad Finn of The Globe. I do, and you should too. The Celtics, with their richly talented and complementary starting five, much improved bench and offense flexibility unlocked by Kristaps Porzingis, are a superior team to the one that fell behind 3-0 and lost to the Heat in 7 games in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. But it must be acknowledged that the Celtics' Game 1 victory Sunday, as impressive and dominant as they were for most of it, left some old familiar concerns lingering. The Celtics started as if they had been waiting for this stage for weeks, jumping to a 17-2 lead. The Heat delivered bursts of counterpunches, but after a 31-14 third quarter launched the Celtics to a 91-59 lead, it looked like it was over. And it was, but not without a lot of unnecessary tension. The Celtics slipped into casual mode on offense. The Heat never stopped chipping away. And, well, even as time and score suggested, the math was never on Miami's side. It got more uncomfortable than it needed to be, especially once Heat backup DeLon Wright decided to hit a three seemingly every other trip down the court. The Celtics won by 20. That counts as a blowout. But at times, they sure do have a way of making a big lead feel small. It seems strange to say, but this is the truth. The biggest shot of the day wasn't by Porzingis, Jason Tatum, or Jaylen Brown when they established their early lead, or by Sam Hauser, who channeled 1985 Scott Wedman in the second quarter, burying four threes without a miss. It was Derek White's three with 3:35 remaining to give the Celtics a 106-88 advantage. It interrupted an 18-2 Heat run and confirmed that the Celtics indeed had plans to make another shot before the final buzzer. Admit it, you were starting to wonder. White, by the way, played a fabulous second half, scoring 18 of his 20 and making smart decision after smart decision. I continue to believe the Celtics would be best served if every important possession were initiated by White. The fourth quarter also had better stick as a reminder of the cruel twist that can happen when business isn't taken care of. The Celtics endured this last year when Tatum rolled his ankle on the first play of Game 7, ruining their long climb back from their mostly self-inflicted three-game hole in that series. For a frightening moment late in the fourth, the Celtics' willingness to let the Heat believe they were mounting a comeback of all comebacks nearly got Tatum hurt again. With 59 seconds left and the Celtics leading 110-94, Tatum was undercut by the Heat's reckless Caleb Martin. Tatum landed on his tailbone and popped right up, but the fall was enough to make the Garden crowd gasp in unison. The Celtics had a 32-point lead going into the fourth, but because they played around and made it tense, if not exactly close, the starters were in long after they should have been. They have to learn this lesson. They cannot give the Heat, the battered, proud, physical, borderline dirty, Jimmy Butlerless, defending Eastern Conference champion Heat, any opportunity to do something weaselly that affects the Celtics beyond this series. Take a look at the weather forecast from The Current this morning. It says today it'll be mostly sunny, a low of 44, a high of 64. Wednesday, cloudy and breezy with a couple of showers, a low of 33, a high of 60. And Thursday, it'll be sunny with a low of 35 and a high of 57. Taking a look at what's on the air today in sports. Starting in college baseball at 7 o'clock, Clemson at Georgia on ESPNU. Major League Baseball at 7:30, Houston at the Cubs on TBS. And at 10:30, regional coverage, either the Mets and Giants at 9:45 or Baltimore and the Angels at 9:35 on MLB. In basketball, at 7:30, Phoenix at Minnesota on TNT and True TV. And at 8:30, Indiana at Milwaukee on NBA. And then at 10 o'clock, Dallas at the Clippers on TNT and True TV. Hockey at 7 o'clock, Washington at the Rangers on ESPN. And Tampa Bay at Florida on ESPN2. At 9:30, Colorado at Winnipeg on ESPN. And at 10 o'clock, Nashville at Vancouver on ESPN2. From the Red Sox, credit to players and coaches for punching above their weight so far. The Red Sox boarded buses after Sunday's 6-1 victory over the Pirates and made the two-hour trip to Cleveland. Paper bags with subs were available for the journey. First baseman Tristan Casas had already left, heading back to Boston for further testing on what is feared to be a fractured rib. The group didn't include Trevor Story, who is away from the team as he recovers from season-ending shoulder surgery, or Lucas Giolito, who is out for the season after elbow surgery. In all, the Sox have 12 players on the injured list, at least 8 who would surely be on the active roster if healthy. Yet the Sox are 13-10, which is better than 17 other teams, including the Dodgers, Rangers, and Diamondbacks. You can be, and should be, upset with ownership for cutting the payroll and seemingly turning its attention to other matters. But at the same time, you can be impressed with the Red Sox, or the job that the Red Sox players and coaches have done, persevering through a series of injuries. This is by Peter Abraham of The Globe. Manager Alex Cora looked wrecked before the game while discussing the loss of Cassis to a ribcage injury. Every indication is that he will miss significant time, but Cora was smiling afterward while assessing a three-game series sweep. "It's good for everybody," he said. "It was a total team effort. We know where we're at roster-wise right now." The Sox lineup was quite something. Tyler Henneman, who arrived from AAA Worcester about an hour before first pitch, batted eighth as the designated hitter. He's a 32-year-old journeyman backup catcher who was called up Sunday because he was the only healthy position player not on the 40-man roster, not already in the majors. Connor Wong, who is usually at the bottom of the lineup, batted fifth. Bobby Dalbec, who was 1-for-26 with 15 strikeouts, batted sixth. You don't see a lot of 0-38 hitters batting sixth 23 games into the season. Josh Winkowski came out of the bullpen to start. He was followed by former Carpenter Cam Boozer, Greg Weissert, Rule 5 pick Justin Slayton, and Chase Anderson, a 36-year-old playing for his seventh team in the last 6 years. "That was a fun game," said Slayton, who picked up his first major league win. "Congrats to all who have wished the Red Sox could collect spare parts like the Rays and put together an effective lineup. Now they do. They don't know any better, some of them. They just show up every day, willing to work," Cora said. "The coaching staff has done an amazing job. You see the work we put in. It's a little different than in the past. More specific, more actually. It's a different group than in the past. It's a good bunch." Tyler O'Neill is set to come off the concussion injured list in Cleveland on Tuesday. Rafael Devers, who had missed the last 4 days with a sore left knee, should also return. Devers told Cora he was ready to play Sunday, but with a day off Monday, the manager decided to wait, watching his teammates win three games and score 18 runs without him could get Devers going at the plate. NFL draft, key strategy, find the helpers. This is the wide receiver and offensive tackle draft. Yes, it is very possible the first four picks on Thursday night in Detroit could be quarterbacks, but that probably says as much about roster construction in the NFL these days as it does the quality of this year's QB class. The players most likely to succeed in this draft class are those who support the quarterbacks, from the son of a Hall of Fame receiver to at least a half dozen pass protectors who could be selected in the first 20 picks. The position groups are also loaded. Don't be surprised if the first defensive player selected comes outside the top 10. Quarterbacks. The overview. Four first-rounders appear to be a lock. It's just a matter of when. The intrigue comes later. Will another slip into the first round? Caleb Williams, 6'1", from USC. Mahomes-esque traits on the instincts, mobility, and arm talent to break down a defense even when he does everything right. Drake May, 6'4", from North Carolina. Size, arm, strength, athleticism are ideal. Can make a variety of throws with accuracy, but can be an erratic and reckless at times, trying too hard to be a playmaker. Jaden Daniels of LSU, accurate deep passer and explosive runner with a slender frame. J.J. McCarthy from Michigan, a difficult prospect to evaluate, has all the physical tools, plus scores well on intangibles such as leadership and maturity. And Michael Penix, 6'2", from Washington, prolific lefty with accuracy and arm strength to attack the whole field. His injury history, knees and shoulders, his age at 24, and questions about his ability to deliver consistently when pressure forces him out of to move around. Running backs, Jonathan Brooks from Texas. And then it goes right to wide receivers, Marvin Harrison from Ohio State. Precise route runner with superb body control. Strong, explosive, though not elusive after the catch. And let's see if anybody local doesn't suggest any teams that these players could go to. From the tackles, Joe Alts from Notre Dame, 6'8", 320 pounds, technically sound, huge and strong, not an exceptional athlete, but the worst-case scenario for Alt seems to be solid NFL starter. He's picked for a top 10 slot. And then Ula Fashuna from Penn State, 6'6", 312, checks all the boxes, size, athleticism, and character, wasn't a consistently dominant as tools suggest he should have been. And then Talise Fagua from Oregon State, 6'5", 324, powerful run blocker who plays in excellent balance. There is some concern his average athleticism and wingspan could push him to guard. From the shorts, Nets fire Fernandez as head coach. Jordy Fernandez was hired Monday as coach of the Nets, who are looking to bounce back after missing the playoffs for the first time in 6 years. The Nets finished 32-50 and fired Jacques Vaughn at the All-Star break. Kevin Ollie finished out the season as the interim coach. Fernandez spent the last several seasons as assistant head coach to the Kings, helping them win the Pacific Division last year. A Masters green jacket wasn't enough for the world number one Scottie Scheffler. Scheffler was running on emotional fumes, fresh off his four-shot victory at Augusta, but full of purpose that more than made up for his lack of preparation for the RBC Heritage in South Carolina. The result not only was similar, it has come to be expected. He walked away from Harbortown on Monday morning with another victory that extended a dominant not seen since the peak of the years of Tiger Woods. Ex-Falcons quarterback Ryan calls it a career. Matt Ryan, who put up Hall of Fame-worthy numbers over his stellar career with the Falcons, came up heartbreakingly shy of a Super Bowl championship, announced his retirement as a player Monday. The decision wasn't a surprise, given the quarterback hadn't played a single disappointing season with the Colts since the disappointing season with the Colts in 2022. Let's see if we can get some starters for you for tonight, as the Red Sox have Houck, 3-1, 1.35 against Livy of Cleveland, 0-1, 3.60. That's a 6-10 start. The Yankees have Stroman, 1-1, 2.42 against Blackburn of Oakland, 2-0, 1.08. That's a 7.05 start. And the Mets at 9:45 have Severino, 2-1, 2.14 against Webb of San Francisco, who is 2-1, 2.94. That's the latest from the sports world. I'm Chris Kelly. I've been reading from the Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024, Harvard Current Sports section. Stay tuned now for a Chris News program. You can catch the front pages with Jim McPherson and Kathy Donaher at 1 p.m., 6 p.m., and 11 p.m. Have a great day.